Welcome to the podcast edition of Business Week in Review with Jeff Beaupre, Business Radio for the Business Minded, a service of Colorado Networks and Evanix in partnership with the European Economic Chamber and sponsored by Fairlane Web Consulting, exclusive web services provider for Business Week in Review. And now, here is your host, Jeff Beaupre.
Well, welcome everybody. Happy Friday. Hope the week went well. It has been crazy as usual. I've got some great folks again with me this morning. My co-host, Robin Roberts, Pikes Peak National Bank. Welcome, Robin.
Good morning.
And Jeremy Zimmerman is here from Assured Partners. I have had to work all week to remember Assured Partners because I keep forgetting that.
Yeah.
So welcome, Jeremy.
Well, thank you for having me.
We're going to talk some politics and some financial risk management this morning. Just a couple of things on the cyber side, and then I'll cover that in the last segment as well. But second segment, we're going to be talking with Robin and the upcoming regional election and talking about her article in the Springs Business Journal. But first and foremost, my favorite subject, Facebook. Yesterday morning, they announced, and you've probably seen it on some of the news reports already earlier this morning, they were caught, or I guess they reluctantly revealed, that they were storing a lot of login credentials in plain text. Between 600 and 800 million accounts. So I think if you haven't already changed your passwords, it's time to do it again. We talked on this program, it's been a month or two back. Change your passwords. Well, time to do it again. One more time with the, not browsers, but the search engines. People have been asking about how can I search without going through Google's tracking. So again, it's startpage.com and DuckDuckGo will save you from the tracking information. So you can follow that. The last segment I'll get into, and I'll save that for the end, is the Nest products. There's actually more of them now. Yeah, Robin's already grinning from ear to ear. There were some things that were not quite revealed, and there was another one again this week. It's going to get interesting, but let's save that for the last segment and get into the upcoming election and what's going on. There's some interesting candidates out there, and Robin had a very interesting perspective. We talked earlier this week about let's look at the future and not just kick the can down the road, so to speak. Talk about that, Robin, and you published a great article this week in the Business Journal. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, yeah, I did. I wrote an article, a guest article for the Colorado Springs Business Journal, and just pointed out because we're in a regional election city election, really.
City election,
for,
yeah.
Mayor and then three at-large council seats, that, you know, so much is changing in our world. Technology drives change. It's always been changing, but it's faster.
It's faster now, and it's disruptive, too.
It's disruptive, and when we look at the roles that we expect to have our government play, I think everyone can argue about, well, government shouldn't do that and shouldn't do that, but I think we can agree that we expect government to take care of infrastructure, roads, stormwater, that kind of stuff. And we pay taxes for roads, but we see a lot of decisions that are being made in our city leadership, by our city leadership, that are done in old ways of doing things. When you look at where the automobile industry is going, there's a lot of changes. Self-driving technology is in most new cars, and every year is getting better. When you look at what other countries are doing, in particular China, with self-driving technology, Japan is working on flying cars right now. Mm-hmm. Germany is, their automakers are looking at electric vehicles. Our roads and the needs that we're going to have on our roads are not what we need now. We've got to plan for those changes in that infrastructure and that technology to be put in place.
So true.
And people want to live in a city where its leaders are thinking ahead and not constantly looking at old ways of doing business. So my article, the point was, as you're talking to candidates, I'm not talking about specific candidates because that's not my place. That's a personal decision for everyone to make. But it does make sense to ask them questions like, do you see trends and do you make decisions based on trends, or are you someone who makes decisions only on what you see right in front of you? Are you looking at where infrastructure needs are going in the future? Are you looking at how declining auto sales are going to affect that sales tax revenue declining, going to affect our general fund? Those are things that we should ask the candidates before we vote them into office for 4 years.
So true. Well, hold that thought, because we're going to come back and talk about that a little more, and we're going to talk about flying cars. There's something that struck me in that one. But yeah, stay with us. We're going to be right back. You're listening to the Business Week in Review on KRDO News Radio. It is just before 9:15 on Friday morning. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Glad you could join us. I'm in the studio with Robin Roberts of Pikes Peak National Bank, my co-host, and Jeremy Zimmerman of Assured Partners. And we're talking about the upcoming election, but future planning and the disruptive technologies that are involved in this. Talk about some of that. And you mentioned the declining auto sales and what's going on. And right away during the break, Jeremy lit up talking about how is that going to impact the insurance industries. These are major things that are going to be changing. We need to plan for them.
Yeah, it's actually fun to have this conversation with people who can see this, because sometimes I'm talking to people and they're like, that's not going to happen. That's 2095.
Yeah.
No, it's not, because it's already starting. And, you know, you were talking about being in San Francisco and not seeing people driving cars.
Correct.
There, you know, it's the sharing economy where it's the Uber and Lyfts. But as you look further in trends and where auto manufacturers are putting their resources and research and development is in self-driving technology and electric vehicles as well. So different kind of energy sources and self-driving technology. And we can envision, and it's not far away, a situation where you're ordering up your car to come and pick you up. People aren't owning vehicles. In 2017, 27% of 17-year-olds didn't get driver's licenses.
That's remarkable. I mean, you used to count the
hours
until
from our generation. But moving forward, that's not necessarily how things will go.
Yeah, and there's definitely a fear out there for younger drivers. I mean, from a statistical standpoint, driving now is more dangerous than it's been in a long time. We've got, you know, just in Colorado Springs alone, you're talking hailstorms, but then you talk about distracted driving on a whole nother level. And teenagers, you know, even adults alike, you're hard pressed to have a conversation with somebody without them checking their phone. So now you're putting an inexperienced driver behind a wheel, handing them a cell phone because you want them to be safe and call me when you get there and all that fun stuff that we never used to have to deal with. And it's causing issues, you know, on the road. So a lot of these people are saying, we're not going to get licenses just yet. We don't feel comfortable. I can get rides, Uber, Lyft, all these different things. It's priming us to not really probably ever own our own car. And that's that potential. And that's already happening in the bigger city.
Yes. I mean, in Colorado Springs, it's a very spread out geographically city. So that's further down the road, but not that far.
No.
And this sharing economy is just so convenient and less expensive. But you have to take that then one step further and say, what are the revenue sources that our local governments expect and rely on? Those, you know, sales tax revenue is a big percentage of Colorado Springs general fund.
What's the largest producer of sales tax revenue?
Auto sales is one of them. I mean, that's a large purchase. Our sales tax rate is 8.25%. That's a lot. And so if you're taking a $30,000 purchase at 8.25%, and you're taking many of those out of the general fund, what is that then? Where does that take us as far as revenue sources? Mm-hmm. And it can go, you can just continue to extrapolate out where there will be changes, because it's a ripple effect throughout our economy and throughout our national economy as well. It's not something that's scary. If you see it, you just adjust. Don't businesses just do that?
You have to, or you won't survive.
And that was the point of my article with the CSBJ, is our elected officials have to adjust as well. They're not running a business. I'm not saying that a city is a business, but change is still happening. And we need elected officials who are thinking forward and not like digging in their heels, like, we're not going to have change here. Well, no one wants to live in a city who's not changing. Well, so we need to change along with the rest and preferably be on in front of that change.
And those disruptive things sneak up, just like in a business. You know, look at CD-ROMs, you know.
Rotary telephones. We're not trying everything. To save their jobs.
Everything is a, yes. is a disruptive technology that comes up. And as a business, if you're not up at the 30,000-foot view keeping an eye on things at times, something's going to bite you and you're out of business. And it's going to impact city revenues. And it's not just our region. It's nationally yeah. and internationally.
It's just really looking at trends and saying this is where it's going. You can see the trends and you can see where it's going. And it's instead of saying, well, we're not going to do that here, or no, it's not going to affect Colorado Springs, and being in denial, that's not going to get us progress. We need mm-hmm. elected officials and city leaders that are saying we see the trends and we're making our decisions on all of the decisions that they make, ordinances and development incentives and all of that should be focused on where the trends are and not how we've always done things or how somebody wants it done, because that's not all, those things aren't always in alignment.
Well, you already mentioned, Jeremy, it was really interesting about being in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And you didn't see anybody driving their own car.
No, I mean, literally, I stayed right downtown. Like, I could look out the window and see the Salesforce building and all the fancy stuff going on in San Fran. But you look down in the street, and literally all you see is ants running around. Well, then you get down on ground level, and being from the Midwest, I say hi to everyone. It's just part of who I am. Talking to people, I'm like, oh, are you looking for so-and-so address? And then like, well, no, I'm actually delivering food. And everybody on the ground floor is either delivering food or picking people up to go to places. Very rarely do you see people driving their own cars without an Uber or a Lyft, you know, ticket sticker in the window. So it was an eye-opening experience. And I think,
when was this? Just recently?
Man, this was St. Patty's Day last year.
Okay.
And, you know, from your perspective, Robin, talking about, you know, trying to keep things the way they have always been, like, we have more access to information than we've ever had at any point in time. I mean, I remember being a kid and waiting for the encyclopedia to come. Well, now it's on your phone. It's not even a computer anymore. You don't have to open up and dial in. I mean, it's instantaneous. So if you're telling people this is how things are in this area, but you see it differently everywhere and you see progression in a positive way, it's hard not to try to be involved and move forward in a positive way.
So true. So, yeah, it's one thing that I really get spun up when they say, well, that's the way we've always done it.
Oh, I hate that sentence.
That's yes. About the same as in this studio, if you say small business, the back door is not very far away.
That's funny.
But we, yeah, so to the point is, look at the candidates, ask hard questions, go to the forums and say, what's the business plan? What are we doing in the next 4, 5, 6 years? You have to be thinking about it now.
Yeah. How will that affect your decision making as mm-hmm. someone who's making decisions on 25-year incentive plans for development?
Oh, there's a good point. When you look at that, you know, mm-hmm. and we've given away that revenue source, then you see sales go down. Now what do you do?
And big empty buildings. I mean, I can foresee some of these buildings that we're saying we're going to give you 25-year incentives being empty in 10 years, given where retail is going.
Well, yeah, in retail, you know, we say the Amazon effect, you know.
But it's not just Amazon.
No, it's all of them.
Everything is on the internet, and that is a delivery channel that is taking up more and more percentage of sales. So when you've got an empty building, where are your incentives going for 25 years?
Yeah, it's out the door.
What's going to replace that? I mean, we probably can't even see or foresee or think about what could replace that.
Yeah, very good point. Well, the takeaway for everybody is go check up on the candidates, ask those questions. Go read Robin's article in the Business Journal. It's a great one. Glad you could join us, Robin. I know you've got to head out, but and we're going to talk more on the 5th of April about a very big announcement. We'll tease that. So, yeah, you got to come in and hear that. But we're going to go to a break. Stay with us. You're listening to the Business Week in Review on KRDO News Radio. It's 9:27. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks to Alan, TJ. Appreciate all the work. You know, as we follow this up, you know, we were talking about disruptive technologies mm-hmm. With what's coming on in our own communities. But it kind of follows into the insurance side as well. Jeremy Zimmerman's in the studio with me from Assured Partners. And this group is, the gap that we have had in this program for a while is talking about financial risk management of various insurance companies and now cyber.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is doing the initial assessments, how do you handle that and understand what is going on. And Shay has also joined us. He's in Dallas at the moment. Thanks for joining us, Shay. Let's talk about where Assured Partners is going as a cyber insurance. And it's not just the insurance, it's monitoring because, you know, Jeremy had an interesting comment in the prep meeting about traditional insurance. Okay, if you have a claim, you call your agent, you get a call, what, 2, 3, 4 days later, Jeremy?
Yeah.
It doesn't happen in cyber. It's like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So you really got to be on top of it. So Assured has come up with a very unique approach to this, again, from a kind of a disruptive technology or a disruptive business plan. Talk a little bit about that, Jeremy, and Shay, dive into this as well, because we were talking in the prep meeting about your approach to this. Why don't you, Jeremy, you start it, and we're going to get Shay wrapped up into this.
Yeah. So basically, at one point, you approached me regarding the cyber piece of it, and we were talking about how there are those gaps that you just explained. And then, ironically enough, I met Shay, who presented a program that we're partnering with that has more of a proactive approach rather than being reactive, because traditional insurance tends to be a little more on the reactive side. You sit around, you wait, something goes wrong, then there's a process of a claims process. Well, when you're talking cyber, that information is disseminated so quickly that you have to get out in front of it as fast as possible to mitigate the risk, which at the end of the day, we're reducing risk. That's the whole point of insurance. So what we've done is I've brought Shay in as a, you know, he's kind of the policy expert, so to speak, or the program expert. And why don't you talk a little bit more, Shay, about the program itself?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, the program is, we're a business called Coalition, and we are a cyber insurance company that is a mix of security folks, kind of white hat hackers, if you will, mixed with insurance professionals that have been in the industry for a couple decades, like myself, as well as some software folks to manage and create scanning and monitoring services for our insurance policy holders. And exactly as Jeremy said, the world is shifting very quickly, as you all know, on the cyber front, and risks are kind of, new risks are presenting themselves at all times. And so it's not really enough just to have an insurance policy today for your cyber insurance for your, in case you're breached. You need to have kind of monitoring and alerts and more proactive, more services, that sort of thing, to help you keep abreast of the risks as they pop up.
That's a very good point. And because it's changing so fast, and it's not a traditional insurance model anymore because of its speed and even the claims. I mean, people say, you know, if we're doing an assessment and we ask them, do you have cyber insurance? Oh yeah, that's a part of our normal business liability, and it's, you know, maybe $20,000 or $25,000 worth of coverage. I've seen it go. Some of them say, "Well, I've got $100,000 in coverage. That's more than I need." If there's a breach, right, in today's world, that's not the lunch money for the lawyers that are going to be involved.
That's copy, correct, money, basically.
Coffee money.
Yeah, copies. Correct. Like, oh, hey, copies. We ran copies today. There's $20,000. No, it's
one of the interesting.
Go ahead,
one of the interesting stats too, I just want to put this out there because it's pretty scary, but roughly 60% of small businesses in the United States that suffer a breach go out of business, declare bankruptcy within 6 to 8 months after the breach.
That's absolutely true. Yep.
Yeah, and that's pretty scary. 2/3.
And we've seen, it's not a week goes by, but you know, my groups get involved in some sort of a breach, and there's between payouts and credit monitoring and, you know, everything else, you burn through $100,000 without even, I mean, that's woefully underinsured.
Mm-hmm. But
you've got to do the, you know, and I like your point we were talking about in the prep meeting of doing the initial assessments, showing due diligence before you even issue a policy, because that, that also minimizes the risk to the insurance company that they're just not handing you a free policy and then they go open themselves up to a hack. I guess an example of it, we had a medical entity come to us a month or so ago. They wanted to upgrade their security. In the process, we found that they were wide open on the internet. They had nothing.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm sure Jeremy would just love to write an insurance policy on that one.
You know, and that brings up a point. You know, with this program, you're talking about not just limiting from day one of the right written policy. We're looking at, hey, they're recognizing that we've been wide open for some time. We haven't really had any claims or issues, and they're willing to basically have complete prior act coverage for those types of situations, whether or not you knew they were existing. So that's one huge benefit that I was told about the program, because traditional insurance, I mean, they only want to cover the amount of time that they're on. And if you want prior act coverage, you're paying extra, you know, and this is just kind of what they do in their program is it's a proactive and reactive program, and reactive meaning rather than that standard, hey, we're doing a claim for a month. These guys are on top of this stuff. I mean, they've got some pretty lofty goals as far as, you know, taking care of those claims when they pop up. And Shay can probably speak more to that as well.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right, Jeremy. We, Coalition's mission is to solve cyber risk. And that is not just obviously on the insurance side, but it's teaching small businesses and eventually larger businesses as well how to protect themselves and how to have a culture of awareness. It's no different than locking your doors and windows at night before you go to bed in your house. We have to create that in the small business arena as well. And so when we go and look at any given risk, we do a scan in the beginning, and we'll give Jeremy the quote for the business as well as that scan that he can present to the company and say, hey, look at what Coalition has discovered about your exposures and vulnerabilities, and we'll help actually fix them. So the example of the healthcare company you mentioned there, Jeff, that we would go in a situation like that, and we would help you guys, all of us as a team, get that company protected. If it was remote desktop protocol or something like that that was open, we would show them how to close it, and then we would insure them. And we would constantly monitor every day anytime that pops back up again or any other vulnerabilities that may pop up in the dark web or software patches that they need to manage or homoglyphic domains that look similar to their domain that aren't. When we see that, we notify the company and say, hey, this domain was just registered in Romania, and you want to look at this because it might be a spear phishing campaign.
Yeah,
so we're very proactive.
Yep, it fits very well. Because, you know, and it's a cooperative training effort, because this is like the neighbor and the parent model. You know, we can go out and pound the drum all day long, as I've done on this radio program, talking about protection and things you need to do. But then when the insurance companies and, you know, and other groups come in and say, yeah, there really is an issue here, you know, the 100% of our breaches are typically through phishing email, as you mentioned, and it's just educating people. You can bang that subject all day long and say, you pound on the drum. It's like it still it sneaks through. So it's a never ending process. So,
true.
Now, a question for both of you: the amount of coverage is always an interesting point, and we mentioned a minute ago about, you know, $25,000 or $100,000 policy and how that's woefully short. What do you typically recommend for businesses? And of course, it depends on complexity and size and things like that. But where do you see that? I'll put that to Jeremy and Shay both.
Do you want to tackle Shay? Or you want me to go on a little bit?
Yeah, well, you know, because only in America today, about a quarter of small businesses, only 25% or so, are even buying a standalone cyber insurance policy. So we'll take whatever we can get. If a company wants to buy $100,000 of coverage or $1 million, I mean, we want to start from the beginning because we know that that's a step in the right direction. Jeremy, I follow your lead. What do you kind of see in the marketplace of small businesses when they're starting out and assessing cyber exposures?
You know, I have a very candid discussion about risk, how much things cost. you know, where do you see yourself in 5 years, knowing full well that if you do have a full-blown cyber issue, you could be bankrupt in 6 months. What are you doing to protect yourself? You know, one thing I ask most companies is, what's your most valued asset? 90% of the time, that's your employees. What's your biggest liability? That's often also your employees.
Always.
You know, so it's kind of interesting when I'm having a conversation with somebody that says, I want the cheapest price no matter what, when in fact, you know, your biggest asset and liability, you know, the insurance is what's protecting you from those. But in the cyber world, it's basically like opening you up to everybody that can gain access to your business. It's not just your employees. Now you're worried about general public. And, you know, general meaning they're anonymous. I mean, it could be anybody. You know, you never know who's coming in the back door, gathering information, trying to cause problems. So the conversation I have is, you know, this is average loss. This is what we're looking at. You know, $100,000 may be burned up in the first month of fighting this. Are you prepared to go to $1 million in the event that, you know, this takes years to rectify? That way, you know, when you put it down on paper like that, oftentimes there's a little more buy-in. And then 9 times out of 10, because insurance has become so price-driven on most fronts, unless, you know, my approach is to be advisor. But when you're trying to get that cheapest price, you'd be amazed sometimes, like the difference between $100,000 and $1 million, maybe $100 a year, but it's never presented because everybody's cheapest price, cheapest. Well, guess what? I give all the options. We're going out and doing full assessments, you know, and depending on the business, you know, it makes more sense if you're an IT company or you do a lot of work in e-commerce, you're taking payments online. Like, you need to have a pretty beefy policy as to, opposed to, you know, a two-man landscaping crew who has a website. So it's right. Those types of things that right. I kind of get
that's,
into.
That's so true. Well, we've got to go to a short break, and we're going to continue the conversation. But Shay, thanks for joining us, and you're welcome to stay through the break, and we can talk some more about this. But you're listening to the Business Week in Review on KRDO News Radio. Stay with us. We're going to be right back. It is 9:49. Welcome back, everybody. Glad you're listening. We've had an interesting discussion this morning between Robin and the politics. Love to get Robin going on politics. She's always a lot of fun. And Jeremy, I got to spit it out. It's been a busy morning.
It's Friday.
With Assured Partner. Yeah, it is Friday. And Shay, we're talking about risk mitigation and the financial part of it. You know, we're obviously involved in the technical side of it, but you've got to have that financial side of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And a great program that they're working on and partnering with, you know, a number of people, but it's basically training again for the business. You can't say small business, but business, I say from 1 to 1,000 or 10,000, because it changes so fast and you've got to stay on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Before we close out and I jump into some of the cyber stuff, Jeremy, give us a little contact information if people want to have that discussion about, you know, cyber protection, because it's a critical piece and you don't get it with your general liability policy.
Correct.
I'm stomping on the table right now.
I mean, there are a lot. I mean, anytime you see any mass loss, you're going to see a kind of delineation of items. So your GL will start to exclude cyber. It excludes terrorism. It excludes all these things. Why do these things happen? Because we have large scale loss. That's what happens. You know, so as far as contact for me, you know, if you want to take a look at different options, what's available, you know, I can be reached very easily. Direct line 720-545-8839. I try not to spend a lot of time in the office because I don't think it's best served. I like to be out talking to people and really getting to know their businesses, how they operate. You know, and if we can provide value, because at the end of the day, I'm not just selling insurance. If you're paying me a commission, I want to work for that money. So
that's a key point, because it's the only thing we can sell is the value in our expertise. It's
correct.
Not just, you know, you're echoing my own company's line as well, which I appreciate. But
well, and it's an interesting thing, because if you really dig into an insurance policy, which, you know, everybody loves to do, I'm sure business owners do it all the time. I'm kidding. But you know, you've got a 100-page document, and whether you bake cupcakes or a construction company, whatever, 75 to 80 of those pages are exactly the same.
Yeah.
And then there's that little bit of in the middle that kind of can get you in trouble or, you know, have you really secure? So it's good to have a person that understands that and that can really read between the lines and do that job for you because you're trusting them. And if they're just coming and renewing a policy and same old business as usual,
it doesn't work.
You should be a little worried.
Well, Jeremy, Shay, I greatly appreciate you guys being on the program this morning. The last little bit I was going to mention is the Nest home security products. Well, they found both hidden video cameras and microphones in them, so be careful with that.
Oh, lovely.
But we'll cover that at a later subject. We've been having such a great discussion again. But you've been listening to the Business Week in Review on KRDO News Radio. Join us next week and have a great weekend, everybody. Tom Martino's up next.
You've been listening to the podcast edition of Business Week in Review with Jeff Beaupre, Business Radio for the Business Minded, a service of Colorado Networks and Evanix in partnership with the European Economic Chamber and sponsored by Fairlane Web Consulting, exclusive web services provider for Business Week in Review. Business Week in Review airs Friday mornings live at 9, 16 hours UTC, and originates from flagship KRDO Network in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Listen live at KRDO.com and on demand at BusinessWeekInReview.com.